Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with the valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests. Ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
And welcome to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. Today we have an amazing guest who is not only going to be the future of veterinary medicine, but also is going to give us a unique perspective for all of those wonderful dogs who are not the best behaved when they go to the doctor's office. So we are going to have some expert opinions from a young lady named Jody Joseph, the future Dr. Jody Joseph. But first, I want to go over some of the things from last week. Many of you have written in and have called in asking for information on, what do I do when my dog goes to the veterinarian? He hates it, and my veterinarian gives him cookies and does baby talk, and, oh, he loves my vet. But they still need three people to restrain my chihuahua at the vet's office when we have to take one, and we have another reason for us to be at the vet, even for an exam. So we're going to have some expert opinions on exactly why that happens, and a little bit more about that in a moment. Those of you who have dogs in the Northeast, we've got this really variable weather. Please make sure that when you have your dog in the car and you decide to go in for something for a few minutes or for an hour, and if your dog is in the car, please be aware that when you walk in this weather, you could have a 60-degree moment, and then a few hours later, it could be over 90 degrees in the car, even if it's 65 or 70 outside. So be aware of where you park your car and try to park near the shade. I know it seems very, very obvious, but you would not believe how many people leave their dogs in a parked car, and the dogs can overheat. And also, of course, make sure you have plenty of fresh, clean water for your dogs at all times. Well, we are going to welcome our guest today. A very, very interesting young lady. She has been in this field for many years. I'll let you hear from her. But she's got some quite unique perspective of what happens to your dog when the veterinarian technicians take him in the back for tests. Now, it's not bad. They're not torturing your dog. But she will tell you why they don't very often want to have the owners and the owner's energy around the dog when they're trying to work around your dog. You can have the sweetest, best-behaved dog in the world, but I assure you that when the dog is getting blood taken or the deadly, dreaded toenail clippers are coming out, we don't want your energy to affect your dog's behavior. The future Dr. Jody Joseph, welcome to For the Love of Dogs. I hope you will be able to give our viewers and our listeners some wonderful perspectives. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years and give a little input? Welcome, Jody.
Thanks for having me, Janice. I started off just like many pre-vet students doing the veterinary technician route. So I was one of those mysterious people who would bring a dog into the back room. And if you can be the dog for a second, imagine being abducted by aliens. So these people take you away, they put you on a cold table, and then they prod and poke you with a needle, a nail clipper, or just something that you're not usually familiar with. So why would a dog freak out over that? If you, as a human, were to be abducted by aliens, I'm sure you would freak out too. So the dog, there's a lot going through the dog's mind, one of which is, if the owner is in the room, I need to protect my owner. I don't want the aliens to get her or him too. So a lot of times you'll see dominant dogs or even fearful dogs turn into what we call Cujo when the owner's in the room, and then when the owner steps out and they're out of sight, out of mind, it's a completely different dog. So you have this misemotion of, I don't know why I'm here and what they're doing to me, and I don't want them to do this to my owner, to my pack member. As a vet tech, I've been told by the veterinarian, hold this dog down, keep them on the table, do whatever you can to keep this dog on the table. For two reasons. One, we would not want the dog to jump off of the table and get hurt, especially if they have a prior injury and that's what you're examining. And two, the veterinarian doesn't want to get bitten. So they're having the techs restrain the dog, especially if they're these tiny little dogs, and put all their weight, all their muscle, all their power into keeping that dog on the table. So in addition to being abducted by aliens, now the aliens are wrestling them too. So these dogs are already uncomfortable, unstable, maybe because they have an ailment and that's why they're the vet. Maybe because the owners are nervous because they know their dog is nervous, and then the dog will feed off of the owner's energy. And so there's so many factors playing into why the dogs are acting the way they are.
Well, Jody, this is that's a really amazing. I was laughing. I had to put myself on mute because I just had this picture in my mind of being, you know, at the zero ground when the spaceship comes down and all the flashing lights and the silver creatures coming out with the nail clippers and coming out with, you know, the dreaded, oh my goodness, it's blood time, and then on top of that having the owners freaking out. That is a really great perspective you've given us. Now, what kind of things do you see that dogs who would maybe not normally be aggressive or a problem, what kind of things do you see in those good dogs, and what do you think happens in that dreaded back room or before they get to the dreaded back room that creates that in those dogs?
Well, there's a lot that plays into it. One, obviously, if they're not feeling well, if their immune system is down and they're weak and they have a weak energy, they might become unpredictable because they're not in the same mental state that they would normally be had they been healthy. Even a dog with a routine annual checkup, you know, there might be something going on underlying. That's why we perform routine annual checkups to rule out any whether physical or sometimes mental or emotional ailments. Some of these dogs are just at home. Fluffy's such a great dog. And when Fluffy comes to the vet, Fluffy, meaning let's say a Chihuahua or a Golden Doodle or, you know, some of those known to be dominant breeds, they take over. Their energy takes over. They feel that they need to be in charge now because they're in an unfamiliar environment. Even if they go to the vet every year, it's not something they're doing every day. And dogs will live in the moment, so to them, the vet is a foreign place. Every time they go to the vet, there's going to be new smells. Maybe they rearrange the waiting room. They're going to have different animals, sometimes just other dogs or cats or a hedgehog or a pot-bellied pig, whatever comes into the vet clinic. And these are all new experiences for that dog every time. So they have
to
have
this. All right, so Jody, I want to ask you after we come back a little bit more about some of these crazy situations, but please stay tuned for the Love a Dog.
Hey, pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic. and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
And welcome back to For the Love of Dogs. Today we have an incredible guest who is really teaching me a lot of things about what happened in that dreaded back room with those space aliens with the crazy silver table and those horrible nail clippers. Jody, welcome back. You are a pleasure, and I'm so excited to have you here. Can you continue telling us what you were talking about before, where you were saying that sometimes these dogs and other animals are exposed to things they wouldn't normally see, like a cat or a hedgehog or a snake or something else. How does a dog typically react to an animal or a situation that it's never been in?
Well, Janice, so there's a couple of reactions that can happen. The dog can be very curious and overtly friendly and, you know, try to approach that animal. And if it's a cat and a carrier, it may hiss at the dog. Or if it's another dog who might be not feeling well or unstable or, you know, just not, quote-unquote, not friendly with other dogs, then that dog will react to the dog who's approaching it. So there's a lot of mixed emotions and there's a lot of activity going on just in the waiting room, not even getting to the mysterious back room. So there's a lot of barking. There's a lot of growling. A lot of dogs will submissively pee if they're really nervous. We actually had one dog at the clinic I worked at that every time it walked into the waiting room, it had a seizure. And so
wow.
It was actually a Great Dane. So we always had to come with a stretcher ready to go. And the dog never had a seizure except for when it came to the vet. And that's just what, I don't know how we triggered it, but just the stress for the owner, the stress for the dog triggered, you know, more medical issues.
That's, can we talk about that for a quick moment? As you all know, we talk every week about the different ways that physical health can affect behavioral health and vice versa, how behavioral health can affect physical health. I, as a behaviorist with United Canine Professionals, have seen that over and over again where there are dogs who will actually have a seizure or a different kind of activity, even tremors, because of that they're in a new situation. So thanks for pointing that out, Jody. That's a great thing. So tell us about this Great Dane and about the stories.
So this was actually about maybe 5 or 6 years ago when I worked at a small private practice, and we just knew the dog was coming in. We'd have a stretcher ready. And I don't know, the second it stepped from outside into the waiting room, the dog would go down. And so I've only seen the dog a few times. Like, maybe it came in annually just for its annual checkup. Obviously, they avoided the vet unless they absolutely needed veterinary care. But I was fascinated with it because what could have triggered in that dog's brain to almost block, you know, not know what's going on and just instantly block and give out because of, you know, forces that maybe we could have controlled and didn't realize it. Maybe the vet tech approaching the dog and looking it in the eye, or the receptionist chatting on the phone, or the smell of the veterinarian. There's so many things going on in most pet practices that you can't really isolate one particular, you know, cause, but you do see that level of activity is just, it's unreal when you see a dog drop to the floor just like walking into the vet clinic. So, you know, as a vet tech, now knowing what I know about behavior, there are a few main things that you can do to avoid situations like that. You know, one is just simply come in with a calm, confident energy. You know, it's some vet techs, especially starting out ones, they're very nervous, they're very anxious. And so if you're nervous or anxious, the dog can feel that. And then they're going to become nervous and anxious. And then you're going to become more nervous because you'll read their body language and see that they're nervous, and it just spirals out of control. So maintaining a calm energy is important. And then simple things like avoiding eye contact. Dogs see it as a challenge, whereas humans see it as a sign of respect. So when you're looking your dog in the eyes, you're not saying, yes, I'm acknowledging you and I'd like to have a conversation with you. They see it as, I'm challenging you. Oh, why is my owner or why is that vet tech challenging me? I'm scared enough as it is, and now the alien's asking me to, you know, to fight. I don't want to do that. So avoiding eye contact is really important.
It is, and we talk about that where we don't want to over-challenge a dog. We just want to help the dog get through the situation. Jody, I have a kind of a personal observation, and it's kind of related to what you were saying with the dog. A lot of veterinarians, and God bless my veterinarians because I give them a lot of money, the first thing they do is they want to muzzle a dog that they don't know. Can you give us a little perspective about why a veterinarian or a technician might muzzle a dog that has not needed it, obviously, and they're almost like, you know, preemptively putting a muzzle on just in case? And what does that say about that person's energy? Can you kind of explain that to us, why, from your perspective, you see so many people putting muzzles on dogs?
Sure. So I look at muzzles from two different perspectives. One is from the dog's perspective and one is from the tech or the veterinarian perspective. When I put a muzzle on a dog, it's not because I don't trust the dog. It's because that dog doesn't trust me. And so if it's a really, you know, if the dog is really fearful and nervous, sometimes the act of muzzling, which is the pressure point on the top of the snout, could actually calm the dog down. Likewise, if the dog is a little bit uncomfortable with the muzzle, it's focusing its energy more on the muzzle than on the technician or the vet or the procedure going on. So it could even be a little bit of a distraction. However, in most cases, it's the vet and the tech saying, I don't want to get bitten. I think this dog's going to bite me. I'm just going to throw a muzzle on it. And the dog usually, it gets really uncomfortable because of how they're putting it on. They're not approaching the dog calmly and confidently. They're not giving the dog a chance to smell the muzzle and process what this basket is. They just see it as, let me just shove this muzzle on the dog, get this procedure done quickly, and just get through that moment instead of maybe changing their energy of trying to help the dog get through the moment on their own without having to facilitate a muzzle or restraint or, you know, some of the other, I guess, more forceful techniques. So,
I have a question on that. This is kind of interesting. So in other words, you are not only abducted by space aliens who are putting you on a cold silver metal table, and not only are they poking you and taking blood samples to send back to the mothership, but on top of that, they're gagging you. They're putting something around your face And now you feel like there's some kind of electrocution or something going on, and everyone seems so frazzled and flustered. And you, poor little dog, just are like, I just want to be with my mommy. That I can totally see why a dog would feel that way. When we come back, I want to ask you, I want you to think about it, Jody. I want you to kind of imagine your worst case, where not that the dog was the worst, but where the people around the dog were just so out of control or so fearful that it created a problem where there perhaps wasn't one. And I want to hear that as soon as we come back with For the Love of Dog.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Welcome back to For the Dog, Love a Dog. And we are hearing some pretty, I don't know, it's almost like they're rated in a different way. They're kind of V-rated, vet tech rated stories from future Dr. Jody Joseph, who is giving us a unique perspective what your dog goes through when he is at the vet's office. Jody, welcome back. And I'm loving these stories you're telling us. Would you be able to fill us in on some of the things that perhaps you have seen without naming names, maybe things that have been done that you rolled your eyes at, or things you said, oh, my gosh, there's got to be a better way? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Janice. So I actually had a fearful German Shepherd who had an anal fistula, and we were performing a series of treatments on him. And so when he first came in, he was walking his owner. So if you can kind of picture having the woman in with the dog in her hand, and the dog maybe about, I don't know, 10 feet ahead of her, maybe 8 feet ahead of her, and he walked in, and he was so freaked out. And the owner said to me, well, he never does this to my husband. And I think, Janice, you could probably attest to this as a behaviorist. You probably get that a lot of either he never does this to my husband, or he always does this to my husband but never to me. And so part of that is when we talk about energy is how our energy affects our dog's behavior. This woman is not comfortable handling her own dog. He's this big German Shepherd, and she's kind of a tiny woman. And so this dog feels like he needs to provide and protect for his owner. And so he was very fearful as it was. And the owner was just, you could tell she didn't, not that she did not want to be there, but I don't think that she was confident that she could handle her own dog. She was worried that if another dog came into the waiting room, how is my dog going to react? She was worried, well, is my dog going to bite the vet tech or the vet? What's going to happen? And all these uncertainties that built up in her mind were translated into the dog's fearful behavior. And so,
she was setting her dog up for failure. Like we at United Canine Professionals are always talking about that. Set your dog up for success, not for failure, because that's what this lady was doing. Apparently, she was so fearful and so uncertain, and of course, like we say with show dogs, everything goes down the lead. And if you're nervous, and this lady seems like she was, and was probably even maybe a little angry at her husband for not going there and for putting her in this very uncomfortable situation, I can imagine she wasn't the most calm, confident leader. So, Jody, what happened once the dog got in there?
Well, the dog had a few accidents on the floor, which is no big deal, but he was very fearful, and the veterinarian himself did not really want to handle the dog, and so it took a while for me to build up trust with him. We did do a series of treatments, so I performed the treatments that I am able to do, and so the veterinarian would check in and talk to the owner, but really would not give any attention to the dog. So there were some times that the dog, you could tell he was really uncomfortable and he was really nervous. And muzzling him was actually appropriate because it did seem to calm him down. And then there were some of the other times where I would do the treatment no problem. And as long as I maintained, you know, kind of an aloof energy and didn't maintain eye contact or didn't even make eye contact at all, give him a chance to sniff me, that's really important. And just for all the veterinary and vet techs out there, sniffing a dog isn't putting your hand in their face so they can sniff it. Letting a dog sniff you.
I've seen that. You mean when they put your hand? Well, now we have the space aliens are going to cover your eyes, and they're also going to reach out their hand to try to poke you or something, and you're already scared. I can totally see it. I feel bad for our dogs. We got to do something different. Keep going, Joey, but tell us kind of some more of what happened. So this is really, I hate to say funny, but it is, because you realize in talking about it how, you know, we do this to our dogs. Well, some of us don't, but most of us do. Thanks, Jody. So what happens when you stick your hand into a dog's mouth or stick your hand near a fearful dog's eyeballs? What happens?
Well, they could be fearful, so they might try to snap at you, or they might be in some type of pain if they have a neck injury or maybe something going on with their eyes, like cloudy vision because they're older, like a cataract. Putting your hand near their face is obscuring their vision, and if they're painful in that area, they're going to become even more fearful because you're putting your hand in an area that's really uncomfortable. It's like if you were to, you know, let's say break your leg and then someone keeps poking at it and says, does this hurt? Well, yeah, it does. You know, so it's really important that if to let a dog smell you is letting the dog approach you from the side. You know, don't stick your hand in their face or, you know, try to poke their eyeballs with your hand. You know, it's not a good idea. Just give them a chance to approach you on their terms. And don't do the baby talk because that's going to get them very excited in a negative way. A lot of vet techs are like, oh, who's a cute puppy? Or, you know, the vet even might do that. And that baby talk is creating excitement, and excitement can lead to dominance, and dominance can lead to aggression. So it's just going to be a progressive behavior getting worse and worse just by doing the things that people do every day that they don't even realize they're doing that's creating the problem in the first place.
Wow, well, that is that's pretty amazing kind of what we do to our dogs and not even realizing it. Jody, what was, like, let's say a time when you felt that you were at a turning point where there was a dog who perhaps was fearful or perhaps dominant, and you knew that if you did the wrong thing that you were going to get bitten or that the dog was going to react. Are there any cases that particularly stand out with you? Any, like we always say, the little white fluffy dog?
Well, this case, actually, they talked about the German Shepherd. The more he came in and the more the owner's confidence got, I didn't tell you how it was resolved, but I maybe saw him 5 or 6 times, I'd say, in the series of treatments. You know, by the third or fourth time, we had our system down and he had no problem. And the owner was much more confident and relaxed. And you could even see it from the first time to the second time and the second to the third, et cetera, et cetera, how her energy changed, which changed the dog's energy. So this case that I just described was the turning point, you know, was when I did talk to the owner a little bit about energy and behavior. I did mention nutrition, and I don't want to bash brands, so I won't, but, you know, the food that he was on was not the best food for him, for his particular, you know, nervousness. And so she, you know, she switched the diet, and she was working towards getting him in a better place physically as well as emotionally. And she got herself in a better place, and she gave herself more confidence. And that changed the case around. So now I'm no longer a vet tech there because I'm in veterinary school, and the techs who are taking my place have no problem with the dog. So it was a really good case that I actually can mention the good and the bad and the ugly. So
well, that is awesome. And that's, of course, you know, most veterinarians and vet techs are doing what they do to help our dogs. So if we can be helpful, that would be wonderful. Well, we're going to ask Jody to stay with us for one more segment, and stay tuned for The Love of Dogs.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
Welcome back to For the Love of Dogs. And today we have future Dr. Jody Joseph, who will be a veterinarian and hopefully be able to help some of her employees and her vet techs that she will be hiring and teaching them the proper way to work with dogs. Jody, one thing that has always troubled me, and I had a veterinarian I used for years, he had a to be very pleasant, a very large and very strong female vet tech. And I would bring in my Rhodesian Ridgebacks, who are, you know, pretty good dogs. They're, you know, 85, 90, 100 pounds. They're pretty good size. And literally, this vet tech would come in and would lie down with her entire top of her body, literally lay. And she was probably a good 250 pounds. She was a large girl. She would literally lay down on top of my 100-pound dog, who was then wondering why, because I didn't do anything wrong, and I've been really well-behaved. I haven't tried to bite anyone. I'm sitting there being very compliant, because as you probably know, my dogs are pretty exceptionally well-behaved. Most of them are service dogs, and they are really good. But it was her own fear. Now, my dogs didn't move, but why is it that people want to restrain dogs to such a degree, literally laying their bodies on a dog who's, you know, not even doing anything wrong? And maybe that was just the vet clinic, and that's why I don't use them anymore. But have you seen that in your practice where people are kind of preemptively laying down on top of the dogs, really getting death grips on them when the dog hasn't shown any reason for that?
Well, Janice, what I've seen is a lot of veterinarians have their own particular style of restraint that they think is the ideal way to do things. So some vets have, you know, certain different techniques. There are very general techniques, but some are very laid back and say, you know, just hold a little bit of their collar, and this dog looks like it's a less is more dog. And by less is more, I mean that a dog with less restraint will actually respond better than more restraint. And actually, in most cases, I believe most dogs are less is more dogs. Occasionally, you get those chihuahuas that you have to tackle, but it's very, very rare.
we've all seen those.
But in other cases, veterinarians say, it's your job. This is your job. I am paying you to restrain an animal to make sure that I don't get bitten and that you don't get bitten. And some vets just really want you to just push that whether it's a dog or cat, down on that cold table, maybe because the procedure you need to do involves you not hitting a moving target, you know, giving a vaccine or drawing blood. It's nice to have a dog that's not moving. But if you're tackling it and you're cutting off their airways and, you know, preventing their diaphragm from, you know, expanding their rib cage and, you know, stopping them from breathing isn't actually solving your problem. It might be creating more problems.
But it would make him be calm, and it would make him, after, because he'd pass out because he couldn't breathe, and then he'd be much easier to work on. Maybe that's why they're doing it.
Well, I don't think that's really the case. I think it's a lot of it is tech-to-tech and vet-to-vet. So I've seen many vet techs throughout the years that are so confident in what they do that they really barely have to do anything.
For your dog.
And then I've seen other techs that are novice or just starting out, and they're doing exactly what the vet says because the vet wants it a certain way. And so some of it is, you know, within control, and some is with beyond the tech's control. Sometimes when you bring an animal into the back room and a couple of techs are working on it, they'll work in a different way than when the vet's watching. Usually they're a lot more laid back when the vet's not hovering over them. So when your boss is telling you, hey, you have to do it this way, you're going to do it, you're going to, in theory, do exactly what they say. But occasionally, you know, when you're on your own, then, you know, you can just kind of barely hold the collar, or, you know, maybe even not even have to restrain the dog if they're that well behaved. But I think a lot of it is really just the veterinarian thinking that this is the way it needs to be, and that's the way they've done it for 20 years, and so that's the way it has to be, instead of maybe reassessing, well, maybe that chihuahua doesn't need to be tackled to the ground. It could be, you know, just lightly touched, and that's okay too. So it's really an individual style that I think creates this problem, that there's no really one way to do things in the veterinary community.
Wow, well, that's interesting. So there's not that much really done in vet school then about actually restraint techniques or really behavioral things to do for the dogs. It seems like it's almost like where you're learning the medical portion without learning what I call the holistic approach to a dog, where, you know, we're treating the dog like an entire one entire being, instead of we have to take blood from the right leg, so restrain the dog's head to the left and his right leg to his right. I think I've got the idea here that it doesn't seem like it's one of those things that is really a set process or a procedure, and maybe that's something that we can all change. I'd like to mention about right now about the proper way behaviorally to restrain a dog is first of all to get the dog used to this. And not by throwing cookies at him and not by giving him a shock collar to zing him when he's not behaving, but just in general, like you were saying, the lady with the German Shepherd, I can totally see that was a, you know, going to be failure. That was setting the dog and the owner up for failure, not for success, because she was already of the mindset that, and with the little white dog you mentioned, she was already of the mindset that, oh my gosh, he's going to be bad, or oh my goodness, the dog is going to misbehave. And of course, if we set the dog up to fail, well, the dog isn't going to succeed. How can you succeed when all the things in your life are, you know, everything's getting scary, and we're just not doing right by our dog. Now, from my vantage point, because I know Rhodesian and Ridgebacks hate to have their toenails done, not that my guys will do anything, but they hate it. It's kind of like forcing somebody to eat a food they don't like. So if you're able to, instead of making the horrible, dreaded nail clippers even worse by also having your energy and other people's energy in your family or at the clinic, kind of setting that dog up to fail at the beginning, if instead you took the nail clippers out and you play and you turn it into a fun experience, but not by making cookies and clickers and all that, which are fine for, obedience, and certainly that's fun, but by changing the behavior and starting to teach the dog that it's not going to kill them and it's not going to hurt them. So if you took the nail clippers out and instead of trying to, really manhandle the dog into the nail clippers, we're going to definitely have an easier way to do that. Well, what we would do is we would take the nail clippers out, we would touch the nail clippers to the dog's nail, and obviously this isn't rocket science here, but the main thing is most people look at the dog to see what the dog's reaction will be. If you just walk over when your dog is standing there or lying down and you take the nail clipper out without saying a word and getting him excited and, oh, no, Fluffy, I've got the dreaded nail clippers, and you touch the toenail with the clipper and then just start petting him and giving him a belly rub, he's not going to be likely to, he's not going to be likely to react. And if you do that enough, and we'll talk about that after the next break, if you do that enough, the dog eventually isn't going to caring. And then when you come up to him with the toenail clipper, instead of his being fearful, he's just going to figure, it's my nails. I'm getting a manicure. Mani-pedi. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that and say goodbye to our dear, wonderful guest, Jody, in a few minutes. And stay tuned for the Love a Dog.
Attention all pet lovers! Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust, mites, and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, A true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
And welcome back to For the Love of Dog. And before the last break, we were talking a little bit about how to get your dog a little more familiar with the nail clipper. If instead of making it the dreaded space alien torture tool, like my one old veterinarian I loved, he used to say, oh, it was doggy torture. And he had a beard, and he would rub his beard on the dog's nose, and he would say it was doggy torture, but he had a great way with the dog. When you're trying to do anything that's not comfortable or that's not natural for a dog, you definitely run the risk. You have the possibility that the dog is going to react like a dog and is going to do something uncharacteristic. And especially when we have a dog who might not be good with other dogs in the waiting room or whatever. I don't know, and I'd like to ask Jody a kind of a quick answer. Jody, what percentage of the people who come in for veterinary appointments, about what percentage of those, or how many out of 10, come in to get their dog's toenails cut, or the dreaded anal gland expression? About what percentage are just coming in for, you know, minor procedures?
Well, Dennis, I'd say about maybe 50% end up getting it done anyway because they're due. So the dogs don't come in, or the people don't come in with the intent, but it ends up happening anyway.
Ah, so people don't just come in and bring the dog to the vet and have the dog knocked out so that they can express anal glands or doing toenails or some kind of general things that the dog doesn't like to do at home. You don't see a lot of that?
Maybe, 75% do specifically anal glands or toenails or just routine exams. So we see quite a few where a dog will come in routinely just for that procedure is maybe around 50, because most animals that come into the vet come in with a problem rather than just for a routine.
Ah, okay. That's surprising. I would have thought it was more people than that, but that's very interesting. If we take a dog who hates its toenails being done, and I want to relay a funny story. It's actually the dog's name is Stella, and it's a bearded collie. For those of you who know what a bearded collie is, it's not like a Laffy dog. It basically looks like a gigantic overgrown Shih Tzu that is, maybe 50, 60 pounds, or at least 45 for the females. And they have this gorgeous, luxurious, silky, long hair down to the floor. Well, when these dogs need to be groomed, you're talking about a lot of grooming. We're not talking about, brush the dog for 30 seconds. You're talking about perhaps a half hour flipping the dog over. Well, I went to a client's house, and among other things, chasing the ceiling fan as it was moving and other things like that, chasing dogs that were going behind their house and where the dog was jumping over the fence to go after the other dogs. I said to her, my client, I said, well, while I'm here, why don't you go get the brush and let's work on that as well. And you actually take the brush and brush your dog. She says, oh, no, because that's going to be very difficult. I said, no problem, go get me the brush and I'll do it. You don't have to do it. She said, well, should I get my husband? And I said, why? Does your husband have the brush? She said, oh, no, my husband lays on Stella while I try to brush her. And I looked at her, and I said, if your husband tried to lie down on me to brush my hair, I would bite him, too. And, of course, she laughed, and then she realized what she was doing because she was setting her dog up for failure. She was already so panicked, oh, no, I need to get my husband. Well, I mean, that sounds crazy, but this is an actual case. Well, I walked in, I brushed the dog. The dog nipped at me a little the one time. I corrected very gently and humanely, corrected the dog with my finger. And the dog, you know, tried one more time, and I corrected her again. I didn't look into her eyes. I didn't try to challenge her. I didn't try to confront her. I just wanted to brush her. And the best people in the world are groomers, because the groomer gets paid by the number of dogs they're able to groom. So the quicker they can get your dog in and out safely, the more money they'll be able to make. And this is a business deal. So that's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. So when a groomer goes in and starts working on the dog, the groomer isn't looking into the dog's eyes. The groomer is looking at the dog's foot to do toenails, or looking at the dog's jawline, or looking at the dog's undercoat. Whatever they're looking at, they're not looking into the eyes of the dog. And that's why so many groomers are actually pretty decent at handling dogs. Now, the other thing is, we work at United Canine Professional. We actually work with a lot of groomers who do high-risk dogs. They do those dogs who other groomers have a hard time with, because they, you know, some of them have certainly been bitten many, many, many times, like most vet techs have been bitten. But the groomers have figured out, the good ones anyway, have figured out how to get dogs groomed without having horrible, you know, terrible reactions, and the dogs don't have a problem. Well, then they're able to charge a little more because they're doing the dogs that are a little harder to do. And the other part of that is the owners are happy because the dogs come back looking nice and they're happy. They're not terrified, they're not drooling, and they're not dripping with saliva from being restrained. So, Jody, we have a couple of more minutes left. I want to just ask you what you see as the future of canine behavior relating to what you've been doing in the past and what you're learning at vet school. And we do have a program I'm very proud of. And Jody, if you would tell a little bit briefly when you're talking about the school about what's going to happen next week at the school.
1 minute.
Sure, Dennis. So I feel that it's really important to be able to convey behavior information to veterinary students, because that is something that schools lack. So Cornell College of Veterinary Medicine has invited Janice to come and speak about natural canine behavior rehabilitation, and we are using dog psychology to fix problem owners. So teaching the vet students how to handle the owners more so almost than handling the dogs will completely re-energize this entire veterinary field. So most veterinarians say, I want to be a vet because I love animals. Well, guess what? You have to learn how to love people and how to show people how they can be confident and how their energy is affecting their dog's behavior. And with that newfound confidence, their dogs won't hate going to the vet. They'll enjoy going to the vet. It'll just be like going to the park or going to their favorite toy store. And so that's what I'm hoping that, you know, next week by Dana speaking, she'll be able to communicate to Cornell Vet School and then maybe to UPenn and Colorado State and all the other 28 schools in the country how we need to view behavior as veterinarians, as human beings. And so I'm really excited about that.
Well, thank you, Joey. I'm very excited to go and to lecture at Cornell for all the future veterinarians and hopefully some of the staff there also, to learn about natural canine behavior rehabilitation. And everyone, make sure you check out our website, UnitedK9, the letter K, number 9, professionals.com, and also check out what we are going to be doing on our Facebook pages on UnitedK9professionals.com and our show For the Love of Dogs. I wish everybody a fabulous, fabulous weekend. Enjoy your time. Make sure you hug your dog when you get home. And please keep yourself happy and healthy, for the love of dogs.